and podcast audio and Facebook Live are both going, wait a second, what's the deal with that podcast audio? Testing, 1, 2, 55,000 gazillion, there we go. Alright, 55,000 gazillion, that's how I, it's Tuesday. There you go.
It's wicked.
Alright.
I hope you're...
Like the sunny side,
sunshine,
sunshine.
Hitting corners, ducking one time. In my platinum
it's
photo. Tin it out,
roll.
I hit the beach and I see tops down. Girls with their tops down. They got bikinis and they thong zone. Dancing to the thong zone.
I hope you're sure happy it's Tuesday in the wine cellar.
All right.
Maybe. Why are you trying to give me a glass? Just give me that bottle.
Or I had to make sure my soundboard was going to cooperate and or rate, right? Okay, so let's go ahead and get this thing up and running. I need to play full opener so that I can get these things going. You know, the extended trigger warning.
We sold my shit up. Knuckles all fat and shit. Sorry, though, it's all good. Whipped his ass so bad, his stepmom's gonna feel me for the next 3 birthdays out this motherfucker.
Look what his homeboy did to the side of your head.
What you talking about, kid? This shit, he ain't fading nothing over here, though.
One ass whooping, man. They still want.
How you figure that, man? Look around you, man. They own this shit. They own this couch you sitting on. Them shoes you got on your feet. This building. This school. This country. You. We behind enemy lines, dog. One beat down and never compare to 439 years of captivity. Never. I don't know shit. Freshman.
This show is brought to you by the fuck that Father Teresa does not give. In Father Teresa's wine cellar, we believe all oppression is intersectional. And this means our analysis of current events frequently includes discussion of difficult and explicit content. Any combination of the following topics could be included in our show: murder, rape, war, climate change, racism, sexism, violence, sexual violence, homophobic violence, heterocentrism, discrimination and abuse against individuals of nonconformist sexuality, domestic violence, child abuse, child rape, child neglect, elderly abuse, verbal abuse, police brutality, microaggressions, ableism, cyberbullying, genital mutilation, ideological extremism, and people just being total fucking assholes.
They on this couch you sitting on.
This show.
The shoes you got on your feet.
Is brought to you.
This building.
By the fuck.
This school. This country. You.
That Father Teresa does not give.
Mm-hmm. There's a certain way that you might open it from there. That's when you say it's all right. WineCellarMedia.com. Father Teresa's Wine Cellar, the original. It is now the Black Podcast. And the Black Podcast, Phoenix Kaliter, the Uppity Negress, Lisa Loco, White Splainer in Chief. Chief! Catherine Loco. Catherine is a nigger. That is a fact. And Fallon Loco. Fallon Loco still repairs bicycles. Fallon Loco makes prison hooch from scratch. It's pretty good stuff. Damn good hooch. Fallon Loco makes that in the backyard. I dig it. It's a very good style, if you will. Fallon Loco, sociologist. Bad motherfucker.
I hope you're sure happy it's Tuesday. In the wine cellar.
This show is so black.
Maybe. Why are you trying to give me a glass?
Just give me that bottle.
All right, so, this could not wait until white-on-white crime. Fallon Loco linked this, in the Wine Cellar Podcast Friends group on the Facebooks. And, I was like, holy motherfuck damn. I don't know who this person is, all right? But we will get to that. That will be the last segment, though. All right, this, Debs OG, teen mom rapper. We will begin doing some rapping, and I might do some rap-splaining. I played a little bit of it. I didn't play the whole thing. I just listened to about, I probably got like 45 seconds in, and I was like, I got an idea. I have an idea for where I want to take it, right? The program is live through the Facebook Lives, and it's live through the Blog Talk Radio. You can call in 347-857-3937. Nobody ever calls in except for people that are just searching keywords on Blog Talk. That's it. I think people just search keywords sometimes and they're like, oh, look at them, we'll tune in. And they do. They proceed to tune on in. All right. What's going on, Locos? A couple of folks tuned in. Not many. Never many people tuned in live. It's always the archive hits. All right, and again, it's going to be very clip-heavy. Like, we're actually going to open up with a clip that's around 10 minutes. And, oop, boot, skibby, flip, bop, ba-dibba-doo. That clip is, it's coming from RT America, which, of course, you know, folks don't like that because it's Russia Today America. And but they did an interview because it was about Seattle dumping Wells Fargo. And this person's name, Kshama Sawant. And I think even the person that introduces her does not pronounce her name right. You know, like that's one to learn. And it's not like you can't. It's just we're not putting in the effort. I know I'm not trying hard enough. Yeah, I should definitely learn how to pronounce her name along with everybody else. And too bad she can't run for like much higher office, because I think that she's not from McMurka. But I mean, fucking George Washington wasn't from here. That nigga got to be president. What the fuck is that? What the drilly with that though? It ain't banging. And again, heavy on the clips, got that clip. Of course, the LGBT news update from Lavender Media. Jim Hightower dropped one today. And the 6-minute Green News Report. And I have a little bit of news and comment to get to my gosh darn self, right? And that'll be about that. Checking the phone bank, no one's tuning in. I need Lisa Loco and Fallon to be on the line again. That shit helps. FBI investigates a rape claim at a Fairfield County jail. And what you'll see in that story on WineCellarMedia.com, a ongoing thing where women are going into a back room off camera where it's like, I need to change clothes or I need to get to shower or something. And this same this same fucking cop guard motherfucker goes in there with them and then they're in there for what seems like a few more minutes than what would be normal. And, and then, he's been raping them. And, that's on WineCellarMedia.com. Pittsburgh offers several resources for sex workers, but the industry's stigma keeps many from accessing them. It's not just the industry stigma, right? It's the fact that it's considered a crime for some oppressive bullshit excuse for a reason. All right, that's a big part of what it is, because you show up to get them and it's like, why are you there? Because I'm a sex worker, you're under arrest, you just admitted to a crime. Another rapist cop, a Wichita cop, is a rapist, and that story is relatively fresh and unfolding. And we actually have the video of the Wichita police press conference on the Facebook.com. WineCellarMedia.com page on the Facebooks. And meanwhile, in Florida, a man is arrested for harassing police. What? Okay. Phoenix posted that. You know what? That's a white-on-white crime. Or hold on to that for Wednesday. Michigan teachers joke about sexually assaulting and killing students. A man accidentally texts a former employer while planning a murder. Save that for White on White Wednesday. This is stuff that Phoenix Collider has up, WineCellarMedia.com. And we know about Jerry Sandusky's pedophile son, just like his pedophile father. And Burger King is featuring adult Valentine's Day meals, which that holiday is essentially over. You know, the corporations made their extra little piece of coin. And, again, for white-on-white crime, that Klan leader that was found murderfied, well, it was his wife and his son. They done gone and killed him. So that's a pretty good white-on-white crime. And checking on the notifications. All right, no comments are coming in, right? I don't want to miss anyone commenting. You know, I like to read your comments on the program. All right, good stuff is chilling. All right, so let's go to RT. And for the folks that play the podcast audio, like just the audio show, you'll notice an increase in the quality of the volume because I found a splitter that allows me to run a 3.5 millimeter directly into what folks would call the mixing board when actually it's a multi-track interface. But I'll use your vernacular, that a 3.5 millimeter that I was able to expand and run into the mixing board. Okay? So you'll notice that for you podcast listeners. All right, let's dig into it.
The city of Seattle says it's taken an opportunity to make a moral statement with its money regarding the Dakota Access Pipeline. It's got a budget of about $4 billion, and it's decided to pull $3 billion in city business out of Wells Fargo because of the bank's support for the heavily contested pipeline, especially as Seattleites' protest over the pipeline has heightened. Now, the pipeline is designed to transport as many as 570,000 barrels of crude oil daily from North Dakota to Illinois. It happens to run beneath the North Dakota Standing Rock Sioux Reservation's water supply, and even the smallest spill could damage it. On top of this, more than 3,300 leaks and ruptures at oil and gas pipelines have been reported since 2010, according to the Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration. So Wells Fargo is loaning the developer of the pipeline $120 million. It's one of 17 banks doing the same thing. Wells Fargo has fired back, saying it spent 50 years serving Native American tribes across the nation, including services to the Standing Rock Sioux, and has taken a thorough look at negative implications of the pipeline, believing it's supposed to be a positive thing to move forward on. Now, this move by Seattle is a real smack in the face as Wells Fargo works to resurrect its brand. Seattle Mayor Ed Murray told Wells Fargo last fall that its $100 million bond would be withdrawn from it in light of Wells Fargo's illegal practice of opening deposit and credit accounts behind customers' backs, for which it was fined $185 million in September. But back to the pipeline. The project has been stalled in the face of protests and regulations put in after those protests. But the developer of the pipeline could get clearance from the Army as early as today to finish the $3.8 billion project. So let's bring in City Council member Sham Sawant to fill us in on the details of what went down in Seattle. Thanks for joining us on this. So first things first, how long has this been brewing within the city council? What made it finally come to a vote? I mean, this was unanimous 9-0.
Yes, it definitely was unanimous, and this is a historic step taken by the Seattle City Council. But I'm glad you're asking how this came about, because the lessons, the narrative of how our movement won this is very important for us to share across the nation. I mean, we really won this because myself as a socialist on the City Council, I'm completely tied to and accountable to social movements. So I, as an activist, have been part of the No to the Dakota Access Pipeline movement in Seattle. And together, my fellow activists and I, we put forward the legislation first in November. On November 1st, we put this to the City Council, but it was not taken up by the Democratic Majority City Council. It was stalled in committee for 2 months, but then we continued building the movement. We brought the movement's voice from the streets into the halls of government. We filled City Hall with our activists, and we flooded the City Council phones with phone calls. And we forced the City Council, mostly dominated by corporate politicians, we forced the City Council to put this to a discussion last week. And there's so much pressure from the movement that politicians who have a rhetoric of fighting against Trump cannot actually say that they're against Trump and then vote against this kind of really important historic measure. And that's how, together with the movement and the movement having its own voice in City Hall, we were able to win this historic vote that we hope will now go nationwide.
Right. Well, of course, if they're said to be representing Seattleites and those Seattleites are showing this sort of passion, it must be listened to. I've got a question, though. Was there any talk with Wells Fargo beforehand? I know the mayor issued a statement to the bank on the heels of its scandal before this with opening fake accounts. But was there any interaction with Wells Fargo about this specific issue before it came to debate, before it was voted on?
Well, I don't take any corporate money, and so I don't feel like it's my obligation to talk to such an evil corporation. But I can tell you this. Wells Fargo issued a completely disingenuous statement in response to our committee vote last week, saying...
Let's hear her say that again. Let's see. That's how you talk that gangster shit. Let's hear that one again. Oh, man. I like that shit.
But was there any interaction with Wells Fargo about this specific issue before it came to debate, before it was voted on?
Well, I don't take any corporate money, and so I don't feel like it's my obligation to talk to such an evil corporation.
About this specific issue before it came to debate, before it was voted on?
Well, I don't take any corporate money, and so I don't feel like it's my obligation to talk to such an evil corporation. But I can tell you this. Wells Fargo issued a completely disingenuous statement in response to our committee vote last week, saying that they are legally and contractually obligated to continue financing the pipeline. And my response to that was, give me a break. They broke the law when they opened 2 million fraudulent accounts. They broke the law in 2012 when the Department of Justice indicted them for targeting African-American Latino households for subprime loans, even though they qualified for prime loans. So this is a corporation that has broken the law over and over again when it comes to exploiting the interests of working people and making massive profits for the top executives. And suddenly now they have developed a legal conscience? Absolutely not. And that illustrates that this movement, if we are to stop the pipeline, if we are to stop Trump's billionaire and bigoted agenda, has to build from the grassroots. We need unity in action from the grassroots in the 99% and fight against big business, fight against Trump. But this movement has to have a militant edge to it, because otherwise we will not be able to defeat big business and Wall Street and the oil lobby.
Well, and as you've pointed out so well, you know, I'm from Washington State, and in every single election, you see that state turn blue right away on the maps. But there are a lot of Democrats who aren't carrying out what they claim to be their more liberal viewpoints. And you obviously have forced that issue with Seattleites coming in. And that's very impressive, just from what I know about Seattle politics. But let me ask you this. How do you go about finding an appropriate bank? Wells Fargo is one of 17 banks involved with developers. It's lending $120 million, as we talked about. But let's take a look at a tweet sent out by the Seattle City Council. It says, 9-0, council members unanimously vote to lapse a contract with Wells Fargo for banking services. Bid for next bank will incentivize, quote, social responsibility. Where are you going to find a moral bank? because every one of these guys are not running a nonprofit. They're not all, you know, do-gooder community banks. Where are you going to find someone to deal with your budget?
Thank you so much for asking that question. You're absolutely right. We are very clear, and we've been saying this publicly, that Wells Fargo, it's not as if Wells Fargo is a bad apple in a basket full of good apples. All these big banks are corrupt, and they are complicit in precipitating the economic collapse, the financial collapse that happened in 2008, and is still unraveling as far as households and working people are concerned. So we have no illusions that there are a whole host of good banking corporations out there. We know our fight is not just against Wells Fargo, but against the entire financial oligarchy that controls the global economy. But the point is that actions like divestment by a major city like Seattle do a couple of things. One is that, first of all, most immediately, it is going to prove a major boost to the movement against the Dakota Access Pipeline itself. This is the bare minimum that elected officials should be held accountable to. And like you said, Democrats, you know, have a rhetoric that is completely different than the Republican Party, but don't actually step up to the plate unless social movements are pushing for it. And that's what we're doing on the ground as
what I'm asking is, are you going to start like the Seattle-friendly bank? How are you going to find that? Because you're doing a bidding process. I'm asking, what's the step forward now?
Yes. So one of the things that we've done in this legislation is that we've changed the criteria through which a bank qualifies or not to be considered for the bid. And changing the criteria where we put more weight, you know, more weight on the parameters of social responsibility and being good and not breaking the law and not targeting customers for discrimination, puts other banks, smaller banks, but still corporate banks, on top of the list. But in our view, and I'm really glad you're asking that question, because in our view, this is not the end of the road. What we want to do also, like, you know, one thing is we want to fight the Dakota Access Pipeline. But the second thing that we want to do by using this historic measure is to push movements, build movements for a public bank. You know, as you know, Democratic Senator Bob Hasegawa has put forward a bill for a public bank in the state legislature year after year. But the Democratic Party establishment has been an obstacle to this. You know, Democrats and Republicans are different in many ways, but they have a bipartisan agreement against, you know, taking moves against corporations.
Well, and we know, and you and I both know, they may have different language.
The public bank.
I know what you're saying about the public bank movement, and what you say about the parties is interesting because they have different language, but come on. We know, you and I know, they've got a lot of similar vested interests that is difficult to push against. I've got a question about future contracts. I mean, as you mentioned, this has set a precedent. How do you go about finding contractors based on these sort of things, other industry, from construction to other industries that Seattle needs to contract with? Are there going to be more strict parameters on who else they're involved with, on their environmental practices?
I think, first of all, the legislation that we passed yesterday is not just about the bank that we deposit with, but it's also for all industrial contractors that the city contracts with. And, there's a two-part answer to your question. On the one hand, yes, there are actually companies that do follow the law, do use unionized labor, do not engage in discriminatory and illegal practices. That is true. But at the end of the day, I think the point of your question is also the fact that sort of points to the fact that ultimately, we cannot do a bad apple versus good apple sort of narrative. The whole capitalist system itself is set up to exploit working people. It's set up to exploit public entities, set up to exploit the 99%. That is why I would my message to all your listeners, all your viewers, is that we have to fight for every reform that we can under capitalism, but ultimately, and against Trump, but ultimately our fight is against the system itself. And that's why I would urge everybody to check out socialistalternative.org, because that's why I'm a socialist. I'm fighting for every reform possible in this system, but I also don't think that the system can be reformed in order to fix every problem that we have. If we are to end climate change, if we are to fight for renewable energy, if we are to fight for public banking and public corporations, then we have to fight for socialism.
Well, you certainly are working from the ground up, and you've done an unprecedented job, as far as I'm concerned, dealing with Seattle City Council. You're a fighter, and kudos for how far you've come and how strong you've driven this message home, right? Because it's got to start somewhere.
Thank you so much for joining me, Seattle.
In the wine cellar.
Maybe. Right. Why are you trying to give me a glass? Just give me that bottle.
All right, so that was they did a fantastic motherfuck job there. All right, so let's dance it on over to Wine Cellar Media Com, and we're not going to get into the white on white crime ones yet. Now I'm going to save those for tomorrow. And I tried to contact Lola Phoenix, medium.com writer Lola Phoenix, could not contact her, and I tried to there was another part. I tried to get at two people today, and I couldn't get any guests on the program. Shauna J is still scheduled for Friday, and William Spivey is still scheduled for Saturday. All right, so we still have those guests coming up. I don't have anyone for tonight, and let me reload the phone bank. And I don't have Lisa Loco and Fallon Loco. Cause I guess also because the time is just so darn different, right? It's not like when we're going on at 10 p.m. on a very consistent basis. And Phoenix Kalita is very sick these days. Becker Loco sent Phoenix Kalita some yarn and some hooks. And Phoenix Kalita was explaining to me how the hooks are better than other yarn hooks. So that was a fair deal. I don't understand. But apparently this is a top shelf yarn and hooks for yarning and hooking. All right, FBI investigates rape claim at a Fairfield County jail. And I had to check the date on this one because I was like, did I cover this already? This is how often, you know, cops are raping. Rapist cops rape. So this is over there in Lancaster. And what was once a closed case. Oh, that's okay. So the case is back open. Because I could have sworn, like, didn't I see this already? So it was once a closed case for the Fairfield County officials. It's now the subject of an FBI inquiry now. And officials have confirmed at the Eagle Gazette, that's a news outlet, that they have received multiple complaints of sexual assault from female inmates who are held at the Fairfield County Minimum Security Jail. All right, now the first complaint came from a female inmate who said that she was raped by a deputy in charge and out in the change out and shower area November 27th, 2015. Security footage shows a deputy and a female inmate walking into a room out of the view of surveillance cameras for 4 minutes and 5 seconds. What happened in that room and to other women who have now come forward with their stories of being victimized by this rapist is now under review by the Federal Bureau of Investigations, though it might not just be one rapist. Like, this may just be a rape squad, you know. Jesus Christ. All right. Wasn't that the nickname the motherfuckers had at Steubenville? They were the rape squad, the rape team, some shit like that. Fuck these motherfuckers, man. All right, but the matter has already been reviewed locally after that Fairfield County Sheriff Dave Fallin described as a lengthy internal investigation. Bullshit! The claim was unfounded. Bullshit! And the case was closed. That was until an outside investigator at the Fairfield County Prosecutor's Office responded to reopened it last spring. Now, a couple of months into the investigation, the prosecutor's office turned over the investigation to the FBI. Phelan confirmed on Monday. Phelan called federal investigators weeks ago, but said they wouldn't reveal where the case stands. Now, meanwhile, the accused deputy is still employed and working, so he's still around more victims. All right, this is a quote from Fallin. He said, my guess is the FBI will come to the same conclusion. It's the kind of, he said, she said situation, unless they know something I don't know, end quote. Remember, you can get this at winecellarmedia.com. Share it with your motherfucking friends and your family. They should know about these kind of cops. But one thing Fallin didn't know is that more than one woman is now, telling the story of the rapist. And, you know, that they put sexually assaulted. All right. Angel Sanderson of the Fairfield County Adult Probation, a mandated reporter who was cooperating with the investigation, said she is aware of three female probationers claiming they were sexually assaulted while incarcerated at the county's minimum security jail. She said there are likely others, but she only had direct knowledge of three women. It is unclear when the alleged assaults occurred, but Sanderson stated that they were first reported to her in the summer of 2016, and that the women had all been incarcerated around the same time. Female probationers identified two deputies, but Sanderson said there was one deputy primarily involved. Sanderson would not confirm the deputies' identities with the Eagle Gazette. Fuck that. The Eagle Gazette previously requested personal files, a video, and other records about two deputies who were allegedly involved in misconduct with female inmates, including the deputy accused of rape. The findings in these documents were published in May. Ha ha, good. Good. And you know what? If motherfuckers don't want to say who it is, then you know what? Publish the name of the whole force and say they all did it. Say they all did it, and then keep running and then after you publish one saying they all did it, now fucking publish the pictures, each individually saying this one did it, until they fucking out the motherfucker. Oh, they won't let you do it in a regular thing? Fuck it. Post it on a fucking, post it on web boards. Post it on web boards from an IP address that isn't yours, under a fucking pseudonym. Post it. The records request revealed the sheriff's office did not contact an outside agency or even investigators who specialize in sexual assault to lead the investigation. It was handled internally by jail officials with some help from the Fairfield County Sheriff's Office. Detectives Kelly Statz and Jason Meadows, they handled it. The detectives were called in to assist in questioning the primary witnesses, the inmate and the deputy. Sheriff's Office Sergeant Jerome Faco led the investigation. However, he is a patrol and jail supervisor and has no experience investigating a sexual assault from start to finish. Phelan said that's why Stats was brought in to assist. At the end of the investigation, Phelan said a prosecutor did not review the findings. Huh? Quote, I don't think we had enough evidence. They put evidence in parentheses. So I guess it meant I don't think we have enough to take it to the prosecutor's office. End quote. The deputy will not be identified in this article because he has not been charged with a crime. All right, now they go on to with a couple more points, disciplinary action. Then they have a sub piece in here called alleged rape. That's all available winecellarmedia.com. Click it, share it with your motherfucking friends, your best friend, your best good friend, like Bubba and Forrest, your best good friend. All right, okay. Let's see what the hell. Let's go to the LGBT news update. Try to get through this episode fast, because I got no guest, and I need my Martha Fracken rest. Ooby-doo. What the fuck just happened? Did I just lose everything that I loaded? Oh, that is fantastic. Alright, so everything that I loaded there did not fucking save. Alright, that's good. That's how I like it. Alright, so we're going to go ahead and bring it directly off of LavenderMedia.com. LGBT News Update for Tuesday, February 14th, 2000. Motherfucking damn 7.
It's now time for Big Gay News, brought to you by Lavender Media. This is Andy Lean in Minneapolis, and here are your headlines for Tuesday, February 14th, 2017. First up, big gay news from Ireland. Irish gay rower Gavin Hennigan sets transatlantic record. Pink News reports that a gay Irish rower has set a new international record after rowing solo for 49 days. A former alcoholic and heroin addict, Gavin Hennigan, finished third in the Talisker Whiskey Atlantic Challenge and set a new international solo row course record, along with an Irish solo row record, as he rowed for up to 19 hours at a time, often burning 8,000 calories per day and losing 20% of his body weight. Hennigan overcame addiction, depression, and attempted suicide as he dealt with coming to terms with his sexuality. Next up, New Zealand men convicted of gay sex to have records wiped. NBC News reports that gay men in New Zealand who were convicted of homosexuality more than 3 decades ago when it was considered a crime will soon be able to have their records cleared. The announcement was made by Justice Minister Amy Adams, who said that while those convicted and branded as criminals would not receive any compensation, they would have their criminal records wiped clean of convictions for indecency, sodomy, or providing a place for homosexual acts. It is estimated that nearly 1,000 gay men would be eligible to have their convictions overturned. New Zealand decriminalized homosexuality in 1986 and legalized same-sex marriage in 2013. Next up, beliefs about better treatment for HIV lead gay men to engage in riskier sex. Science Daily reports that a survey spanning 19 years of participants at a gay pride event in the U.S. notes a consistent increase in the occurrence of condomless anal sex among men, as well as a rise in how many sex partners they may have. The leader of the study, Seth Kalikman of the University of Connecticut, noted that the advances in the treatment of HIV and AIDS seem to have created a complacency among men who have sex with men and caused them to be less vigilant about using condoms with their sexual partners, which has contributed to the rise of the infection rate. The study involved analyzing surveys taken in 1997, 2005, 2006, and 2015 at the Atlanta Gay Pride Festival, in which 1,831 gay men provided anonymous information about their sexual behavior, their beliefs about HIV treatment, their substance abuse, and their perception of sexual risks in relation to the HIV treatment status of their potential sexual partners. For our final story, Tennessee lawmakers introduced bathroom and gay marriage bills. WVLT-TV Knoxville reports that the Tennessee General Assembly has introduced and passed on consideration 2 bills concerning gay marriage and the restroom students in public schools are allowed to use based on the gender found on their birth certificate. According to the Assembly website, the bill would require students in public institutions of higher education to use restrooms and locker rooms that are assigned to persons of the same sex as shown on the students' birth certificates. The website also referenced another bill called the Tennessee Natural Marriage Defense Act, which looks to defend the natural marriage between one man and one woman.
Oops. Oh, holy shit. I closed the tab while it was playing because I'm so used to it playing directly from the soundboard. Oh, that
it's
is
now
that's
time
the
for
charm.
Sex with men and cause them to be less vigilant. Involved analyzing surveys taken in 1997, gay men's sexual behavior, their beliefs about HIV treatment, their substance abuse, and their perception of sexual risks in relation to the HIV treatment status of their potential sexual partners. For our final story, Tennessee lawmakers introduced bathroom and gay marriage bills. WVLT-TV Knoxville reports that the Tennessee General Assembly has introduced and passed on consideration 2 bills concerning gay marriage and the restroom students in public schools are allowed to use based on the gender found on their birth certificate. According to the Assembly website, the bill would require students in public institutions of higher education to use restrooms and locker rooms that are assigned to persons of the same sex as shown on the students' birth certificates. The website also referenced another bill called the Tennessee Natural Marriage Defense Act, which looks to defend the natural marriage between one man and one woman, regardless of any court decision to the contrary. That's it for today. Thanks to Linda Raines for compiling the stories. I'm Andy Lean in Minneapolis. Join us and tweet your take on today's stories on Twitter at the handle Big Gay News.
I hope you're sure happy it's Tuesday in the wine cellar.
This show is brought to you by the fuck.
Why are you trying to give me a glass? Just give me that bottle.
This live broadcast and archive chat room is being hosted by the good folks at Americans United Again.
All right. Man, back to WineCellarMedia.com. This one posted by Phoenix Kalider. Michigan teachers joke about sexually assaulting and killing students. Okay, that's funny. Sure, joke about that. So this is Bangor, Michigan. The secretary of the superintendent of Bangor Public Schools has resigned, and several teachers were disciplined after a video surfaced online that showed the teachers and school staff playing a game at a bar, the game known as Fuck, Marry, or Kill. Oh, Jesus fucking Christ, really? Are we fucking serious here? Let me see if that's what Phoenix Kalider fucking linked me to. Jesus fucking Christ. Fuck, marry, or kill. And they were saying it about the fucking kids. Yeah, what's... And so they asked the players to name three people they would marry, have intimate relations with, or kill. And the footage shows the staff members naming both students and other teachers in the game. Some were names of students with special needs. Jesus Christ, just mix up the, you know, crossing it up, intersecting, ableism, rape culture, pedophilia. Jesus fucking Christ. Alright, because you know what, yeah, because Phoenix Collider did send me messages while I was at work, and I was, I was caught up in that shit. Yeah, here it is. So maybe, Fox 17 Online, they might actually have the vidya. Alright, continuing forward, drop that volume all the way down. Fucking... many parents at the school board meeting Monday night demanded a time to sit down again and have more of their questions answered. They're also demanding the school board to say whether or not they knew about the video before Monday because it was recorded January 13th. Holy shit. Fucking... Wait, Trumpelstiltskin wasn't even sworn in yet. Alright, so let's see if this is, the correct vidya on, Fox17Online.com. Alright. Alright, it's loading up on Phoenix Collider's slow-ass computer. somebody said, this is a quote from, Amanda Reprigal, a parent of a 15-year-old in the district. She said, it was heartbreaking, my heart sank, and I was disgusted. Reprogal says her son, Trayson... Okay, there we go. Alright, so that is the correct one. This coming from, Fox 17. They're probably not gonna play the whole raw video, and I don't know where to find it. Alright, let's see. She said, okay, so that dude said, I totally marry her. The woman said the fat one, and he's saying because she looks like a tiger? You shitting me? Get the fuck out of here. Let's take that from the top.
Right now.
Totally marry
her. The fat one?
Totally marry her because she loves the tigers. She never even brought up the fact that I was wasted on the bus trip.
First to 10, a West Michigan community furious tonight after that video surfaced online, allegedly showing teachers and school staffers playing an inappropriate game at a local bar. The game asked the players to name three people they would either marry, have intimate relations with, or kill.
Yeah, most people have heard of this game. Well, the footage shows those staff members naming students and other teachers in the game. Fox 17's Rebecca Russell joins us from outside the Bangor High School tonight live after attending the school board meeting where leaders addressed that very video. And Rebecca, a lot of parents upset about this one for sure.
Yeah, you know, Christian and Janice, I would say upset is absolutely an understatement. Many parents tonight even having to be escorted out by police. Other parents threatening to remove their children from the school district entirely. Now, secretary to the superintendent, Patty Waite, actually resigned this morning. But the other six teachers involved still have their jobs tonight. And that's something that parents tonight were demanding changes very soon. This was the video that caused uproar in Bangor Monday night.
Ooh, I was...
It was recorded a month ago, showing what appears to be six teachers and one secretary playing an inappropriate game at a local tavern involving their students and faculty members, some of them students with special needs.
It's disturbing to know that these are our educators. They are in charge of protecting our children, keeping our children safe. And the fact that they just blew that out of the water shows their character, shows maybe they're not right for this job.
It was heartbreaking. My heart sank. I was disgusted.
Amanda Reprogal says her son, Trayson, was one of the students named in the video.
Because you teach your kids to respect authority, and then how do you respect authority figure when they behave like that.
On Monday, officials said two teachers were disciplined, but Bangor School's attorney announced there would be no further action taken against the staff members involved.
We made our best assessment based on the facts, and reasonable minds can differ about things. This was our call as to what we felt was best under the circumstances.
Hubert says the two teachers who were disciplined will be on a probationary period for 5 years and closely watched.
So we're going to be following up and monitoring how these teachers do. I think they've learned their lesson from all this.
Now, you heard the school attorney, Robert Hubert, say that these teachers will have no further disciplinary actions taken against them, but those two teachers on probationary watch will be closely watched over the next 5 years, and further disciplinary action could come against them if they do break any rules. Now, many of the parents tonight were demanding that they set up a future date to have some more of their questions answered, also demanding on the school board to tell them whether or not they knew about this video before it came out on Friday, because the video was actually recorded on January 13th. So we'll continue to bring you updates both on air and online at Fox 7. Online.com. Live outside Bangor High School tonight, Rebecca Russell, Fox 17 News.
So, Rebecca, this video was recorded about a month ago, you said. School board just talking about it tonight. Do we know how it finally was revealed on Friday?
Not exactly. It came out on Friday. Someone shared it on YouTube, and then from there it kind of just took off on social media. People started sharing it on Facebook and just got more attention, and I think it just got so big that they couldn't not address it at the school board meeting tonight.
Yeah, a lot of outrage for sure. Rebecca, thanks for that tonight.
All right, so that went on, and you folks looking at the Facebook video, you probably saw my fucking face and saw me moving around frantically. That's because now, after this recording is over, I'm going to have to go back and edit the podcast audio, because that volume was ridiculously low. I have no idea why the hell that was like that. Okay, so that fucking story. So again, like, so that's a very fresh one unfolding, so I'm going to have to look for updates on that. No updates on Daniel Holtzclaw. I checked that while doing show prep. But folks know, anyone who might just be tuning in for the first time, Daniel Holtzclaw, they hid him, alright? Let's just be realistic. They hid that nigga while his lawyers got ready to file for an appeal. So they're filing for appeal saying he didn't get a fair trial because of a media circus, somehow. Alright, while he got to sit there in a fucking suit, and his victims got brought in, you know, the fucking, the cuffs and the shackles and the jail suits, you know. But that motherfucker didn't get a fair trial. I know you didn't get a fair trial. You had it tilted on your side, fuckface. But what, he cut his head bald and, you know, and he's still a disgusting piece of shit. And that's the whole update, is that Holtzclaw is still Holtzclaw. Ain't a damn thing changed. All right, so let's head on over to the Green News Report and go ahead and get a little environmentalism in your system. And what do you think of that? I think that's what you're into. That's your thing.
It's Tuesday, February 14th. 2017.
The Oroville Dam, the nation's tallest just north of Sacramento, now at record levels. Its emergency spillway in danger of failing and unleashing uncontrolled floodwaters on towns below.
California dodges a bullet, for the moment, at Oroville Dam.
This is a wake-up call that we've got deferred maintenance needs that literally put people's lives at risk.
U.S. not prepared for climate impacts on infrastructure. Judge rejects tribe's request to halt Dakota Access Pipeline construction. Plus,
do not be in a position where you may find yourself in front of a fire, because you won't survive it.
Extreme heat brings extreme fire danger to Australia.
All of those stories and Desi with a cold straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Do you believe in science? Because I do.
Republican congressman versus 10-year-old girl at town hall meeting.
I do support an all-of-the-above energy strategy, and I do think coal is an important part of that.
10-year-old girl winning. This is your Green News Report.
Man, that's what Obama said, so they could act like they don't like that answer, but they liked it when Obama said it. Fucking hypocrite.
Okay,
Democrats.
Desi Doyen, I know we've got a lot going on today. I know you're fighting that cold.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, up in the Dakotas, bad news for the Native Americans fighting the pipeline up there.
Yes, and yet another blow to Native American tribes. A federal judge has rejected a request by the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe and the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe for a temporary injunction to halt construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline near their reservations in North Dakota, which the tribes say threatens their sacred sites and water supply. That same judge will hear the tribe's broader lawsuit later this month. Meanwhile, it looks like California has dodged a bullet for now. The threat of a breach at the Oroville Dam in north central California, the tallest dam in the United States, has eased. That's according to state officials. But a mandatory evacuation on Sunday for nearly 200,000 residents below the dam remains in effect. After 5 years of historic drought, a series of storms have filled the reservoir above capacity for the first time in its 50-year history. Emergency water releases to reduce pressure on the dam have seriously damaged its two spillways, which now threatens to undermine the entire structure's integrity.
Yeah, I think the key there is for now. With rains coming in, this is still a very precarious situation.
Yes, it is. And there's a short window of opportunity to make emergency repairs before more storms and the spring snowmelt arrive. That's according to the acting director of the State Department of Water Resources, Bill Croyle.
We're working to really dig down into the reservoir and move as much water out of that reservoir so we have space for the storms that we expect to come in, as well as the snow runoff later this spring.
Environmental advocacy group Friends of the River and the Sierra Club had warned the Bush administration and the state about this exact scenario occurring today. They did that 12 years ago. But the state water agencies were reluctant to pay the estimated $100 million price tag for the upgrades, so federal regulators didn't require them. In an interview on the broadcast, Friends of the River Executive Director Eric Wesselman urged that once this crisis has passed, it's time to address long-standing infrastructure issues.
Take these lessons learned and start taking action to shore up our infrastructure, to make sure that communities are protected and people are protected, as well as, you know, the rivers and the fish and wildlife that call them home that was blown out by these massive releases out of Oroville.
You know, I'm really tired of these folks, these environmentalists and so forth, giving warnings about these things, being ignored, and then years later, once it's too late, being proven right.
And speaking of advance warning, climate change also plays a role, not just lurching California between the extremes of drought to deluge, but also because warmer California winters mean much of this precipitation is falling as rain, not snow. And that's also impacting the state's billion-dollar commercial salmon fishing industry.
Because if it was snow as opposed to rain, it wouldn't fall all at once, or at least it wouldn't fill up the reservoir all at once.
Right. Meanwhile, it's summer down under, and Australia is again facing a record heat wave and catastrophic fire danger, with fire officials warning conditions for the next week are similar to, if not worse than, the conditions that led to the deadly catastrophic bushfires in 2009. New South Wales Deputy Fire Commissioner Rob Rogers warned residents in affected areas to just leave.
The simple message to the community in those areas particularly affected by catastrophic fire conditions is do not be in a position where you may find yourself in front of a fire. Because you won't survive it.
And a new report from climate tracking group Carbon Brief concludes that based on current observed trends, the risk of megafires, like those in Australia, is projected to increase around the world as the climate warms.
Well, it's starting to seem like this whole climate change thing may not be a hoax by the Chinese after all. I don't know, just looking at evidence, but, you know, ignore me. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us and follow us and share us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report.
Oh, Jesus Christ. All right, so hopefully that audio is fixed and I'll be able to run this through to you, because now we're going to go ahead and wrap this gosh darn thing up, because I'm irritated because I got to go back in the middle and I have to edit out that Fox News report, or I don't have to edit it out, but I have to replace the audio. So that's fun. But why was the episode titled like this? Because this here white woman was rapping them raps, spitting them bars. But let me test the audio for Facebook viewers first to make sure that we're on to something. Okay, so yeah, so that audio is coming through now. So it didn't come through from the Fox News, but it's coming through from the Windows Media Player. All right, so this is Debs OG. Apparently, she's a television person. Fallon Loco linked me to this. So a Teen Mom cast and fans have lots of thoughts on Deborah Danielson's music video. And she, she's also known as Farrah Abraham's mom from Teen Mom OG. And she's now a bona fide music video star, releasing her debut rap single and its accompanying music video during the Teen Mom 2 live after show. And, okay, and a lot of people are leaving comments. Fallon Loco linked me to this, and then the other homie Loco, I think goes by a pseudonym, found the clip on YouTube in pretty decent quality. Like, I had found one that I was going to try to work with where somebody recorded it from their television set, you know, like with their smart device camera. But, so this is the MTV music video from Deborah Danielson? I'll tell you what. We're going to figure this dadgum thing out. All right, so fucking take it away, Debbie. Yeah, why isn't it showing the, I download it, and it's not showing me the video. What's wrong with this thing? Alright, so, close that. Phoenix Kaleeder's, her Windows Media Player, it might not have the plug-in to play that particular file. This is great radio. Oh, man, so let me go into the, 214.17 and bring it up on this player. And there it is, video for the Facebook viewers.
Oh hell, we've been kicked out of much better places than this.
Alright, she's been kicked out of much better places than this. I don't know who the fuck did that audio. I guess she's saying dance with me or something. I don't want to dance with you, Debbie. You dance with your fucking self. Let me see. A 4-3? No, a 4-3 is not going to work. All right. Let's see what else she's doing.
More than a mom.
It's definitely not good. That is a fact-based fact. It's not good. It is natural. It is real. It's not good. Why is it real? Because she sounded like herself. She didn't do that Iggy McZalier shit, right? She didn't do like a verbal blackface, right? Debbie was Debbie. It wasn't good. She shouldn't do it anymore. They should delete that one and sue people for reposting it. But it was natural. Matter of fact, I think the only reason why it got billed as rap is because somebody said it's going fast enough to be a rap. If somebody would have said she made a song, people would have just been like, oh, that's just a pop song. Like, the pace makes it arguably like rap, but I don't really think she was rapping. I think she was just being fucking Debbie. It wasn't good. Who the fuck gave her that beat? Just the low quality and the lack of effort that went into the beat made it seem more like a joke. Like, I hope they weren't serious. They better have goddamn not been serious. Like, they actually took time to produce that on purpose. That better have been for the intent of comedy. Alright, I thought I had a lot more commentary on that in my head when I was reviewing the first couple of seconds of the clip. I don't. Alright? Fucking... Yeah, nah, Debbie failed. Alright. So we are a little over an hour. I think that's your wine cellar. So hit you with the Jim Hightower and I'll walk the funk on out of here. But oh no, I don't get to do that because... I don't get to fucking do that because I have to go back and edit that Fox News clip, doesn't I? I sure do does is. Where in the fuck is the goddamn thing? Oh, fuck it all. This shit went completely wrong. My soundboard didn't load right. My Fox News didn't load right. This episode didn't load well. I'm not even going to promote the Patreon or PayPal on this one. This is embarrassing. This is not how it was supposed to happen.
By gollies, the Donald delivers. Trump and his new blue ribbon panel of working class champions have announced a bold initiative to create millions of American jobs. A spokesman for the panel, Steve Schwarzman, praised Trump as a leader who wants to, quote, do things a lot better in our country for all Americans. Wait a minute, Steve Schwarzman? Isn't he a billionaire hedge fund huckster on Wall Street? Yes, and holy money bags, there's Jamie Dimon, head of scandal-ridden J.P. Morgan Chase. Working class champions? Trump's whole jobs panel is made up of Wall Street banksters and corporate powers like Walmart that are notorious for laying off and ripping off workers. Trump, the candidate, fulminated against such moneyed elites, calling them, quote, responsible for the economic decisions that have robbed our working class. But now, in a spectacular flip-flop, he's brought these robbers directly inside his presidency, asking them to be architects of his economic strategy. Worse, he's doing this in the name of helping workers. Hello, to develop policies beneficial to working stiffs, bring in some working stiffs. But not a single labor advocate is on his policy council, in his cabinet, or anywhere near his White House. Thus, the so-called job creation plan announced by Trump and his corporate cohorts doesn't create any jobs, but calls instead for, ta-da, deregulating Wall Street. These flim-flammers actually want us rubes to believe that freeing banksters to return to casino-style speculation and consumer scams will give them more money that they can invest in American jobs. This is Jim Hightower saying, do they think we have sucker wrappers around our heads? Trump's scheme will let banks make a killing, but does not require them to invest in jobs, so they won't. There's a name for this, fraud.